All right, happy Thursday. Who's kicking us off?
Well, I can jump in.
Fire up.
We're rocking. I launched in Richmond today, so
Okay. Got
about 30 leads come in. Got a guy that has some experience doing some photographing and stuff for banks and foreclosure type stuff. So he went out and started this afternoon and knocked out pretty good numbers. They look good. Looks like what he's
nice. Getting.
He knows what he's looking for.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Did you get a VA? So, did you get to the bottom of that VA thing we were talking about?
I done the test batch with the one VA. And
yeah.
He was kind of sketchy. Took about 3 days to get him to finally get on it. So he started to work through them, and we were working through some issues. He's supposed to be working FreedomSoft, but he didn't seem like he was too versed. So I worked with him for about 2 hours, basically sending him screenshots. Here, this is where I want the stuff. This is how I want you, back and forth. So finally we got him dialed in. He started to put some in, and I asked him, I said, hey, just for my own information, why don't you send me a screenshot of your TLO information so I know what information you have access to?
Yeah.
His little green dot went out within a minute, and he's never got back on since.
Imagine that.
Yep. So my other VA, the one that had been doing the work for me, and I had been working through some issues with, so I got on. He says he's been using TLO throughout the whole thing. And the information at first was okay. Seemed like it was too bad, but the second batch was horrible.
Yeah.
So, again, trying to work through it with him. Hey, let's get to the bottom of it, get it worked out.
Yep.
So he started. I give him a batch of pretty good batch, 100 leads. I says, I'm going to pay you to do 100 leads. I want 100 leads in, accounted for. So I gave him 120. So I had 100 good leads.
Okay.
He started getting through them, and he said he was been using TLO. Well, you know, I put the drop down where I have to select what source they're using for their data. And he's picking white and yellow pages and people search and some other ones, and occasionally – he first was doing all TLO before. Now he's actually selecting the ones he got. So I got on with him. I said, hey, this is the guy that I'm paying 80 cents for a lead and a buck for – so I'm paying him good money. So I said, what's going on? You told me you're using TLO.
Yeah.
And he starts backpedaling and saying, well, I've worked for other investors and I have had very good success with them and good numbers. I'm like, well, I'm getting – a lot of numbers. We either aren't getting a hold of anybody, or they don't even belong to the right person.
Right.
I don't know what other investors are getting, but what I'm getting from you here lately is not working.
Right.
So he's
out too.
Yeah, I'm gonna drop the hammer on him. I got another guy that I'm gonna start today doing some skip tracing. Same thing. He's saying he has TLO and all this stuff. So before I even start with him, I just sent him a response here a little bit ago and said, hey, I want proof of everything you're using before I even put you on the deal.
Yep.
If you send me, you can verify that you're using the accounts.
In your ad, don't put that I'm going to verify you have TLO with a screenshot, because they can just figure out how to get a screenshot. So just tell them this is what I need you to use. You start back and forth. They say, yeah, I'm good to go. Say, great. I'm sitting here online. I'll sit here for 2 minutes. Send me a screenshot when you're logged into TLO. I just need to verify, and I'll turn on or I'll give you access to the leads.
Yep. So that's kind of where I'm at. I went through and skip traced a bunch of, I had two groups of 30 I'd set up for testing, a couple of VAs.
Yeah.
And one of them I went through, the one that this flake that, basically, once I asked him what he was using, I went through myself and it just used True People search, and I pulled numbers in those 30 leads. And I was actually, if the person was 78 years old and there's a chance that they could either be moved into a home or something else, I would go down into the thing and grab a couple family members that lived in the area and just copy and paste the numbers and throw them on there. Well, my sales guy was going through, and he's like, man, I don't know what happened, but I'm getting a lot more phone numbers going through and talking to people.
And what are you using, True People?
Yeah, it's just a free.
I haven't heard of this one. Do you pay for it or it's free?
No, it's free. It's free. You just get online, type in truepeoplesearch.com. And so I was checking that data in that against what I've been getting from these VAs.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the same numbers. Sometimes I'm getting more numbers than they're getting.
Yeah. Huh.
And
I haven't heard of
this
that one.
Will,
might be really
and
good.
This one will show cell phone numbers, too, occasionally.
Yeah.
Not every person. Most of the ones that they're pulling in don't have cell phone numbers.
Right. Good resource.
So when you in that website and you go down and it'll show possible relatives.
Yeah. Did we lose you, Mike? I think Mike just got disconnected. He'll chime back in. Are you there, Mike? No, he's not. All right, he'll call back in. I think he's that's happened to him before. So who else is on? We got a question or update. I'll switch back over to Mike when he gets in here, but who else? Gonna be a quiet Thursday, huh?
Sorry, that's me again.
Mike, is that you? Yep.
Yeah,
right, I figured.
Yeah, it must be where I'm at, and I'm working in pretty confined space. But anyway, so I don't know if I'm still on, or you got somebody else in there.
No, nobody else jumped in, so you're back in.
Okay. So, with that resource, so I it's pretty easy. It works fairly well, and it's you can actually do a reverse address lookup as well.
Yeah.
You can either do it either way. And some of the addresses that we've got don't have a good, like it might be maybe a landlord or something, and I can't find out where they were at. So I would reverse look up the address.
Yeah.
And obviously the house is vacant, but it would show people that live there. So we called those people and said, hey, we're trying to locate the property owner and trying to get that information back. So at least he's made some calls and actually he's got through a lot of people. Maybe
nice.
Two more offers today.
Cool.
Are
they
the
vacants?
They are. Yep, everything else has been vacant. I haven't.
Yeah, what did they say? You gave them verbals or sent paperwork? Verbals?
My sales guy was talking to him this afternoon. And
okay.
He's bouncing them off of me. I worked him through one of the deals. Trying to get hit.
I think we lost you again, Mike.
Hello. Oh,
are you there? Hey, now you're back.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, but
Dave?
trying to get him trained on how to run the numbers. So I ran through one of the deals with him to see what he wanted. The guy wants $85,000 for the house, and it's the comps don't support it, but I think he's fairly motivated.
Okay.
He had a render under for 16 years. So we offered, I told him to start at about 64.
Okay. What is it rent for?
Rent for $950.
And how much work does it need?
He said he just got done doing a rehab on it, but I plugged about $5,000 in just for incidentals.
Okay. So you offered 64. What do you think you could sell it for?
I'm thinking probably around the 80, 85.
What's the cap rate on that?
It was right around 12.
Okay. 79.80 divided by 85,000 is a 9. I'm getting a 9.94. So you said 8.
Yeah.
Did you tell me 850 or 900 rents?
950.
950 times 0.7 is 665 times 12 is 7980. 12 cap would be 66.5. So how'd you get 12 cap at 80 to 85?
I basically took, so I took, I'm trying to look back at my notes, how I remember the numbers. So he was, the seller would be all in at 85. So I took out five for incidentals. Just
five
what? 5,000, 5 grand for fix up. I just could put it as fix up because the guy said he had rehabbed it, but I'm not sure. I didn't want to leave a zero on the table there in case something was wrong. I just maybe for fudge factor. And then took out another three for closing costs and any other incidentals, and then 7,000 for acquisition fee, for assignment fee.
Okay. So let's be clear on these numbers here, because you got to be able to run these really accurate. So if you're buying it at 64,000, let me start at the top, 950.
Okay.
Get your calculator out. Jeez, I can't type. 950 times 0.7, 665, times 12, 7980, right? Net annual rental income.
Yeah.
And then, so now you, let's see where your offer is at. You offered 64. So divide, so you have 7980 divided by 64,000. Your offer is at a 12.5 cap. So for you to make any margin here, you're going to have to sell it at an 8. Most likely. And that's assuming it doesn't need work.
Okay.
So I typically want to buy at a higher, I want to buy at a better cap rate than that, sell at 10 to 12 based on the neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
Nicer neighborhood.
Yeah.
We're closer to 10, maybe 8. You know, you get closer to the quote unquote hood or whatever, you know, C-minus neighborhoods.
Sure.
Right? You got to be in that 12 to 14 range.
Typically, where I made the mistake was dividing by, not by the 65, I did it by the ARV.
Yeah, here's the thing.
85. So
the
yeah,
two anchors
so
are ARV, ARV and rents.
Yep.
If we're using ARV is relevant, but not as much, right? So I'm not even asking you what the ARV is in this scenario. Now,
if you're
trying to sell up a house for 85 grand and Zillow says it's worth 65, you're going to have to overcome a challenge. That's what we were talking about on Monday.
Yeah.
You're going to have to, you know, talk your way through that and say, hey, I have comps supporting 85, Zillow's wrong, which is fairly common. Right. You're going to have to try to overcome that. So, yeah. So let's make sure, this is why, you know, I was talking about it Monday. I'm happy to go over it. It doesn't seem like anybody wants to ask how to run the math, but
sure.
We've got to have this dialed, and your acquisitions people, they got to know how to do this.
Yeah.
So you can really easily write this down, right? Gross rents times 0.7 equals net monthly rents.
Yeah.
That number times 12 equals annual rents. And then once you have that number, you can either say, what would a 12 cap buyer pay for it, and divided by 0.12, which is 12%, and that'll tell you what their all-in number could be. Or you can say, you know, the buyer says, hey, give me 64,000 for it. And you say, okay, I want to know, you know, where does that number fall into place? What does that look like?
Okay.
What's the return at that number? So got to be dialed on that. And I want to I'll ask it again. Anybody needs some clarification? This is the two anchors training that's in the, but it's one thing to see the training. It's another to run it. So this is why I'm always running numbers on this call. Cause you got to be, this has to come off. You got to be fast at it. You got to be accurate. Because now, if you get it at 64, I think you're paying too much. So obviously, you can go through inspection and this, that, and the other. But out of the gate, I think your offer needs to be lower than that. So,
Well,
you also said that this thing was remodeled, right?
Yeah.
So if it's rent ready, you may still be okay, right? You need a 10 cap buyer because you're buying it at a 12.5. You've got to have some margin in there. Let's see just what an 11 cap buyer would pay. So 950 times 0.7, that's our 665 times 12, that's our 7980 divided by 0.11, 72,500. So if you have a buyer that says, hey, I'll take a turnkey 11% return all day long, and you're at 64, you've got some room in there.
Okay.
But you're at a 12.5, so you've got to find a buyer that is willing to pay less. What would you say this neighborhood is, A, B, C? or, you know, the war zone? If it's
950,
it's yeah,
probably a C. It's not horrible, but it's not it's definitely kind of in the middle. The rents are a little bit higher than other areas.
Okay. Did you plug the address into Trulia.com?
Yeah.
What does it say the crime rate is there?
I'd have to look at it again.
Okay. Throw it in. If you're not using Trulia.com on this, you got to be using it, especially when you buy in your C&D neighborhoods. So they have crime data for the different neighborhoods. So all you do is, just like Zillow, go to Trulia.com, punch in the address. It'll pull up usually a picture of the house if one's available. It'll give you an estimated value and sometimes estimated rents, very similar to Zillow. And a lot of times they're probably using similar math on what they're doing, because a lot of times the numbers are really close. Maybe Trulia is borrowing the data from Zillow. They're not usually exact, though, but I've noticed they're fairly close. But then right down below the picture of the house, there's a little box that says, I think it says crime rates. If you're on there, Mike, you can tell me exactly. I'm just used to clicking on it. Click on that, and it'll pull up the neighborhood, and it'll rank it from green to red, five different categories. And it'll show you recent crimes in there, like how many thefts under $5,000. How many thefts over $5,000, car break-ins, reported break-ins, that kind of thing. And it'll rate your neighborhood. So you want to know this, obviously. Where are you buying? What does the crime rate look like? And this is where Trulia is another website. So Zillow is probably the most common, but a lot of people know about Trulia, and they're going to go in here and say, what does this neighborhood look like that I'm buying a rental in? And so either if the neighborhood's high crime, you want to get ahead of it and overcome that objection with your story to your buyer. Or if the neighborhood's low crime, you want to be prepared to also build that into your story as a plus, right? And the other thing, too, here is, and this is true with any investment. As risk goes up, return goes up. So, if you've got your mutual fund or whatever, and they say, okay, what percentage do you want to put at what risk level, right? If any of you have talked to a financial planner before and they say, do you want to split it in half? Half of it a little bit riskier, half of it this, and right? And the upside is if it's in a riskier investment vehicle, the potential for return is higher. So here's how this works in real estate. A and B neighborhood, lower risk, typically better tenant, that kind of thing. This is where you can sell, 8 to 10 cap turnkey deals. As risk goes up in neighborhood and crime rates go up and all that kind of thing, hard to sell an 8 cap deal in a poor neighborhood, because they say, wait a minute, when I'm looking at the data here. Now, you may pull the wool over somebody's eyes, but if you want a long-term relationship with your buyers, those are typically selling 12 to 16 caps. Because, hey, this is a C-minus neighborhood. I get it. That's why the return's better, right? So we've got to be ahead of this stuff so that when you go to sell your deals, you can build this into the story and either get the objection on the table and overcome it, or use some of this data to say, here's why this is a great deal. And so, somebody says, yeah, this is only 11 cap. You say, hey, I can get you a 14, but we're going to be in a different – neighborhood profile, I'm happy to do it. Here's what that looks like, right? And then it justifies what you're selling this one for. So, Trulia is a great little tool that I really just use it for that crime rate. So that's slick.
Yeah. So this guy is we'll find out what this was just to get him to the point, and I told him that this is kind of to get him to the table. He's obviously at 80, and he had it, I guess, listed with a realtor and couldn't get it sold. So
I think exactly he
might be more motivated to be realistic.
Yeah, that's totally in your court. Do you need to pull some comps for him?
We did. I didn't pull any MLS comps. I just pulled some off the website or off of FreedomSoft.
Okay. And what were they at? Were they closer to the 60 number?
They're around 70. for, well, I should say they're between 120 and 70. The ones that were 120 had garages. The ones that were
what was he
at
listed
70,
at?
I don't know. It didn't show up what he had it listed for.
Okay.
He just said
that's
80
some great info.
was his number.
Gotcha. If you have access to a property manager or an agent in there, have them look that property up in the MLS. Mm-hmm. It should still find it, and it'll tell you. They should be able to look up what it was listed for, when it was listed, when it was pulled, that kind of thing. They should be able to research that address. So if you know somebody, I usually go to a property manager because what we're doing is, and this is an easy conversation, right? We're going to buy them. We'll find them. We're going to fix them up. I want you to place the tenant, and then I'm going to sell it to an end buyer, turnkey, and hopefully they don't have to, right? But hopefully they're going to keep you in place and you can retain the business. So now when I have an MLS type question, you know, hey, look up this address for me really quick, and they're happy to do it. So I'm scratching their back first. So that's how we typically do it. But, you know, you can find a way. Say, hey, I need a property management relationship in this market. You would probably want to know that, but you have a little bit of intel. You tried to list it for 80-something or more, and it didn't sell. So the market spoke and said, no, it's not worth that. So cool.
And he actually had somebody offer him like 40. So, compared to that,
your 64 looks pretty solid.
Yeah, exactly. And it does have a garage in the back, which the ones that were at 70 didn't have a garage. So I'm thinking 80. It'll support 80. He's a homeowner. He's not a actual typical. He's a landlord just for one house.
Yeah.
And he had someone in there for 16 years. They recently left. So he wasn't probably getting much out of rents either. He had some in there that long.
Yeah.
And he's really questioning
up with the market.
He's questioning whether he wants to, because they obviously tried to sell it and now they're trying to get it rented apparently, and they're not having luck. And he doesn't really want to be a landlord in the conventional sense of a landlord. So I think there's definitely some motivation here.
Yeah, there's some motivation there. No doubt. I mean, a 16-year tenant that's now gone. So he's basically had very little to do with this, except they've paid it. As long as he didn't refinance it, you know, at 15 years, he'll owe less than half of what he bought it. Well, call it half. If you had a 30-year mortgage, you probably look, you know, you could look that up. But, yeah, it sounds like there's some motivation here. So, and if you find out 64 is too high, you know, get ready to get the contract in place. And then say, you know, we got to do an inspection, just like is customary on every transaction. So I'm going to get my team over there and, you know, check the sewer line, check the house. And then if you need to, you can always go back with some of those items in hand if you need to get that price down. So I like it.
And that's what I figured on that as well. I mean, just to get it and get it under a controlling factor, and then we can work back towards something if we needed to. So,
your one challenge may be, if this is a C neighborhood, to find your 11 cap buyer that's going to say, you know, hey, this is a little bit riskier neighborhood, but I'll take 11 instead of 12, 13, 14. I'm not saying it can't be done, but just be ready to either hustle up that buyer or, you know, through inspection, try and get that price down a little bit better.
Cool. So after that, I just been getting the leads in. The next city should be, I think it's already starting off with a different vibe than the first one did. I put an ad on yesterday, and I've had probably 20 people already contact me for the position. I've hired two for driving for leads. So that one I think is going to kick off a lot faster.
Cool.
And then I'm going to let this one work for a couple weeks, getting the leads coming in, and then I'm going to probably reach out to another city. Once I get enough leads coming in, then I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable with my sales guy and being able to start maybe adding another salesperson. But right now, I'm not getting enough leads in to support two guys.
Right.
So
yeah, keep your leads ahead of it. As soon as that's there, though, you know, that, again, that's good pressure to put on the business.
Yeah.
To find leads for them to call, but it sounds like you've got a lot of good things working. Keep the offers going out. You know, keep dialing in how you're going to evaluate deals, running the numbers, And then you've got your sales guy on the phone, so you've got to be meeting buyers five a day.
Yeah.
You got to talk to five buyers a day, whatever it takes. And you, it doesn't,
I called
take,
and
it doesn't take many
text
weeks for that. Yep. And you'll have
that Hampton Roads area.
Yeah.
You made a suggestion to send out text to these guys going on section8.com.
Yeah.
They don't respond to that real well. And
nope.
I'm not getting a lot
start
of
calling. You could have landlines.
A lot of feedback.
Yeah. I like the text because you can do it quick or have a VA do it. And
yeah.
Also go to Craigslist and
yeah.
In the for rent section. And then have you reached out to property managers in the area as well?
I haven't talked to property managers. I've actually been talking to the landlords themselves.
Okay. So reach out to property managers too,
because
they have big networks if they've been there for a while. You want to ask them, you know, how long you've been managing properties there.
Yeah.
You can ask them how many doors you guys manage. I'm looking to set up a relationship with somebody strong in town. So that's a great way to do it, though. They won't always connect you directly to the buyers, but you say, hey, I've got deals coming. Do you have, you know, like an email list or something that you can get this out and see if there's any interest in it? How do you handle that? Is it right? Let's create the win-win here. I know you have buyers that are looking. I'm good at finding deals, and you want more properties under. So let's figure this out.
Okay. To get around that little, remember I had the data problem in the middle of Richmond? To get around that, I went back 2017 and found out when their list went dead.
Okay.
And I pulled just a number out of there and just going to kind of just associate that number to what potential could be happening in 2018.
Yep.
So that's, I did that and
yep.
mapped it. So I knew where they were at just to, because I know there's opportunity. I just, if this is a problem for me and other people are struggling with it and they may not want to find a solution, they'll just leave it alone. So it might be an opportunity.
Yeah, I've only seen this in two places. What was the city where you found it?
Richmond, Virginia.
Okay. Richmond, Virginia, and we saw it in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So what happened is Mike went into ListSource, went to pull some absentee owner data, nothing shows up. So the same thing happened with Tom, and I think I was mainly talking to Tom about this in Pittsburgh, but we're like, well, that's kind of weird. So then we went back. Pittsburgh shows almost zero transactions in the last 6 to 12 months. I think there were seven. And we looked at that and said, that's not right. So then I went back 2 years. Instead of looking up 2017, went back to 2016, and there were thousands. So for whatever reason, there's a delay in ListSource getting the data. And we saw the delay in Pittsburgh, and then Mike found the delay in Richmond. He went back and ran the same thing. You know, ran the last 12 months, hardly anything shows up. Well, we know that's not right. So he just went back in time 2 years ago. And then, you know, same thing like I told Tom, which is what you just said, Mike, is let's assume that if it was X number of transactions in 2016, let's assume that 2017 was similar. I mean, that's all you have to go off is that. So, and it should be, you know, it should be similar. I mean, you wouldn't, if you were to look at Denver the last couple of years, it would be similar numbers. If anything, 2017 was probably even busier, right? Because real estate's on the up and up here nationwide. But yeah, that, you know, we come across that stuff every once in a while. So just go back in time a little further and see what you can figure out.
And I did contact ListSource, like you said, and they were fine. They credited me back for that list that I generated, and so it was not a big deal. They were more than willing.
They're good about that. So
yeah,
Mike ended up buying a list, and I don't remember all the details, but I just told him, shoot the support center at ListSource an email real quick and say, hey, here's what happened. You know, can you help me out here? I'm looking for this data. You already paid for it. Didn't really get what he was looking for. And that's happened multiple times with students where you just ask and they say, yeah, no problem. Here, we'll credit your account. Pull the list again. So cool. So now you have it mapped out, and are you generating leads in the busy areas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it busy all over the place, or is it busy in a few distinct pockets?
There's a kind of right in the center of the city, right in the crosshairs of it, probably where the oldest neighborhoods are at is where the most activity is. The first list I pulled, I did the MSA, the full metropolitan area, and I didn't catch the hole in this inside the city because it was showing data. When I mapped it is when I realized, oh my, there's nothing in the middle of Richmond. Come on.
Right.
So,
so that's how you identified the hole.
Yeah, there's activity on the outskirts as well, but I'm going to start in the middle, and then I'm going to work back out to the suburbs.
And that's common, right? Those are going to be the oldest houses.
Yeah.
Right downtown. That's most major cities. There's activity right in the heart of it, close to downtown. So cool. Good stuff. The data, that's why you map it too, because it's so you can't look at a spreadsheet and see that. You got to throw it on a map. Where'd you map it at? Google Maps?
I'm trying to think of the name of it. I did it on.
Is it a paid one or free?
No, it's a free one.
Okay.
Oh.
Let me know what it is, because I'd like a different option than Google Maps. I think it's decent, but
Batch Geo. I did it on.
Okay, so you just did up to 250.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I do to get around their overage, because it won't let you do anything past that, is I'll do two of them. I'll batch one of them to 240.
Okay.
And then batch another one, whatever the remaining are. And then I can just look at both of them side by side and say, this is what it is.
All right. Yeah, if you want to get them on one map, obviously you got to pay for it. That's what's nice about Google Maps. Yeah, I'm with you. Well, I'm using Google Maps. I don't think it's not quite as user-friendly as Batch Geo, but you can get everything on the same map. So
yeah.
Either one works. Easy Map Maker quit being free about six months ago. Now they're charging. So that was a good solution for a while. I tell you, if anybody else finds one or you can map it free, let us know.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, what was that Skip Trace website? True People Search?
It is. It's called truepeoplesearch.com.
Okay. I'm just jotting that down on my phone here, taking a note.
It seems to be almost as effective as anything I was getting from these guys, but they're using Yellow Pages and White Pages, and they're using probably other free or inexpensive sources, so that's probably why. So
that might not be
tapping into somebody who has TLO and knowing they're using TLO, I don't know what to compare it to.
Right.
It's better than what I was getting.
Well, that's why I'm jotting it down, because that could be a good little secondary resource. I still want a VA that has Lexis or TLO ideally, but that doesn't always happen. So.
Yeah. And how are you, the one Skip Tracer that went MIA on me, that was doing the little batch of 30 when I backed him into the corner and had him try to make him prove what he was using. Yep. I went into and canceled the job after. I give him a chance. I give him 24 hours to respond back.
Yep.
And after I hadn't heard from him, then I went and canceled the job.
Yep.
And it asked, I listed out, gives you 3,000 characters to write out what happened. Well, I used a good part of them out because I wrote a novel explaining everything that I went through with him. And why I canceled the job, copied his quotes from this thing and put them in there.
Yep.
So how do we protect each other from these guys that are not doing their thing
like that on this?
Yeah.
Like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Because now those comments are there and the rating goes down a little bit and, he just shot himself in the foot is all. That's all that happened. So.
Okay.
Yep.
All
cool.
Right. Let's Mails get on there.
Yeah. Who else?
Hey, Mike, it's Dave Gwynn here.
Dave, what's going on?
Hey, man, just running through the market selection stuff here and trying to find the P ratios, kind of in that 10 to 15 range is my thinking.
Yeah, I know the sweet spot is 5 to 14, but the closer to 14 you are, the better. You could even be a 15 or 16 and be slightly oversaturated. Would be easier than a 5 or a 6 typically to find deals. I tell you what, though, running these vacants, I've been working in St. Louis, and St. Louis is like a 0.9 P ratio, and you know, we're able to find deals there. So.
Really?
But, it, you know, yeah. Bottom line is you can do it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, if you can find one that's a little bit better, it'd be a little easier to pick up deals. But hustle
okay.
wins. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Hustle wins.
No doubt.
So.
No doubt.
Yep. Yeah, analyze 10 markets, and if you don't have something you like, analyze 10 more. So you find something you like.
Yeah, I'm up to 20 now, and I've got a few. And when I went into the, you know, less than 100K
yep.
aggregate listed on Realtor.com, is there kind of a threshold there that you want to kind of don't bother with if it's below this and it's more potential if it's
you
above
know,
that?
You know, it just depends. That's an interesting one just to know what does the bottom end of the market look like. I mean, if you put in 100 grand and below in Denver, you get zero.
Right.
If you put 100 grand and below in Indianapolis, you get a bunch. So what
yeah.
we're really looking for is that number. It's not necessarily that those are good neighborhoods because those could be in a war zone, right?
Yeah.
But what it's doing is it's just giving you some perspective on your different markets on is there a low end here, right? If you go into Austin, Texas and put in 100 grand and below, you're going to say, hey, the low end here is high, right? High like Denver. Same with Portland, Seattle, D.C.,
yeah.
those other places. So what does the low end look like, right? Because it's, you know, we're playing the percentages here. It's just easier and more buyers can afford to buy a $50,000 house than a $350,000 house. So it's just part of that equation to look at, you know, put a couple cities side by side. So I like to see how many are currently listed below 100 grand. And then I always Google what's the average single family home price in this market. And, you know, Denver hit, I saw it about 3 or 4 months ago, it hit 487. It's probably creeped up a little beyond that. The average single family in Denver's at an all-time high, 487. So, you know, you go to a place
okay.
like, you know, Pittsburgh, Indy again. I don't know off the top of my head, but it won't even be close to that. So, yeah, if
right.
you're looking at two markets, and you say, well, what does it look like? You're right. We're just putting data together. Then I like to
yeah.
go into, you know, when you're pulling the P ratio, how many absentee owner transactions in the last 90 days? Were there a couple hundred or were there 1,200? So you can get a snapshot of the investor activity, right? So you kind of put everything together. And it's not always black and white. It's not. But
yeah.
it allows us to look at markets objectively. You know, instead of throwing a dart at a map and to actually make an intelligent decision about it. So, again,
sure.
it won't be perfect. So, yeah, run your 20 markets, attach that spreadsheet, send it over to the coaching email, successteam@realamericanwealth.com, and tell me what you picked and why. And then if I see any errors in your thinking or logic, I'll reply to you, or else I'll just say, yeah, that one should work.
Great.
Yep.
Great. And then I had a question for that that vacant thing via FreedomSoft.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that's a good investment, or I guess how does it work?
Yeah,
compared.
I like to talk to it on here as a plan B. Your field leads are still going to perform better.
Yeah.
There are some deals in there. No doubt. The way we like to do it is we like to run the search in the city, and there's a little box you can click out-of-state owners. And so typically
yep.
you've got a vacant house out-of-state. Again, we're playing the percentages. Motivation is usually higher than a vacant owner that – or than an owner that owns a vacant city in the vacant property in the city they live in, right? Because now they've got a distance barrier in addition to everything else. So – that's how we like to use it. And what I tell everybody on here is you should pull 500 to 1,000 of those and get them skip traced. And when you either get on the phone or have an acquisitions person, it's always field-generated leads first. But if you run out of those for a time period, go over to the Postal Service vacant. So
okay.
I've always got, like, in my active account, I've got 500 or 600 of those skip traced. We haven't touched them yet, but if we ever get dry – on the field leads, then transfer the acquisition team over to those. So the field leads are still going to perform better. So that's plan A.
Right.
Those leads, plan B, is how we're playing that.
Great.
Yep.
Great. And then one other question I had was going to the DISC personality test. Last one I'm recording, I missed the call, listened to the recording. And is there a new or a free one out there?
Yeah, if you Google search free DISC test, it'll take you to a link. Obviously, the paid version is better. It asks more questions. But if somebody's honest on the free one, it'll give you very similar, if not the same, results.
Okay.
So, that one's fine.
Good enough.
Did you take it? Have you taken it?
I haven't yet. I've paid for the $30 one a few times for people I've hired in the past. But, I was just going to check out the free one.
And it'll be, if you know a little bit about it, it'll be more challenging for you to answer 100% honestly instead of just saying, I'd rather be that way, and I know what it means in the results.
Right.
So it works best, obviously, if somebody has never heard of it, which it's a pretty common test, but, it's a little challenging. Yeah. There are a bunch of other ones out there. So I like the Kiersey one, Kiersey, if you want to take one kind of blind. That one's pretty good. I know there's Myers-Briggs does one. I don't think I've ever taken that one.
Yep.
But anyway, you probably have an idea how you are anyway.
Yeah.
But it's good to know. Good to know.
Yeah.
Because you want to work your strengths and hire your weaknesses. And if you don't know how you're wired, you have no idea how to go about that. So.
For sure.
Yep. Yeah, it's valuable information, no doubt. What else?
Great. I think that's it for now.
All right.
I'll send that over tomorrow along with the.
Can you get that market selected by tomorrow, or at least give me your findings?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Let's get that knocked out before the weekend so you can move on.
Right on.
Beautiful.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Yes, sir. Who else?
Hey, it's Janie. I just wanted to give a quick thank you. To Mike, I guess, for the True People search. I just went in on that and looked up a couple names and stuff, and it seems to be pretty good, pretty accurate. So I just wanted to say thank you.
No worries.
Everybody wins when somebody shares.
Yep.
My main man, Jim Rohn, said that. Anybody else like Jim Rohn on here? Not Jim Rohn, that sports loudmouth. Jim Rohn. Anyway. That's one of my favorite quotes. Everybody wins when somebody shares. Good stuff. Yeah, and if it's I love it that it's free. That's killer. So that can be that's a great little plan B, right? You get another VA, and instead of paying for a service, you should have that status in your FreedomSoft that says all bad numbers, re-skip trace. Take it over to this True People search and see what comes up. And let's keep this conversation going. We might find out that it's just, on par with some of the other paid services out there. If that's the case, then giddy up. If here's the thing, if we have a free tool like that, you don't have to run an Upwork ad for somebody that has access to a skip trace. You can just say, I need somebody that's good at online research. And it opens up the talent pool, because obviously not everybody has TLO, LexisNexis, Intellius access. That's a VA. So if you just have ask somebody, you can just put an ad on. I need somebody that's great with online research. Just send them right over there. So yeah, good stuff. What else?
Well, has anybody used? A VA through Upwork or wherever to do calls, kind of like acquisitions, but maybe just preliminary calls going through and just narrowing down, trying to find the homeowner?
Uh, here's what I'm going to say is I hope not. How about that answer? Your best opportunity to have a conversation and connect with a homeowner is the first time you call them. If you have a VA call in, they're probably going to be on Skype. There's a lot of miles between them and the person calling. There's most likely a strong accent, not always, most likely. And they're calling up and saying, oh, you know, what's the script? Hey, just want to make sure this is your correct number. I'm going to have somebody else call you. And I don't know that there's a great way to pull it off. So really the process is acquisitions person, sales personality, get them on the phone, homeowner answers, build rapport right out of the gate, and get that offer to them as quickly as possible. That's the most effective way.
Yeah. I was just curious. Larry had talked to somebody from one of the bandit signs.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he, you know, that he uses a VA to make his
yep.
calls like that. He
yep.
gives them a script, and he's only paying $5 an hour. Yeah.
I'm not saying it can't be done or can't work. Rob's tried a lot of different things over the years, and he teaches what he does. This is where he's landed after a lot of trial and error.
Okie dokie.
Yep. It's also you want you get a salesperson that's making $6-7 an hour, less motivation there to really not be pushy, but keep the seller on the phone and get that offer. You get somebody on the team that's tied to a commission, all of a sudden your motivation and effectiveness went up. So
that's true.
I actually tried a call center for a while, and we were paying hourly, and it floundered. And you'd think with being around Rob all this time, I wouldn't even have given it a shot, but I did. Actually, my business partner, Paul, had a relationship with this company, and he was having them work on a different project, non-real estate related, and he said, hey, they're doing a pretty good job for me. Let's give them a shot. And so we let it go 10 days and said, this doesn't work. Let's find a high D phone salesperson, and it's been better ever since. So, but yeah, great question. Not to say that that it can't work or couldn't. It's just not how Rob does it. So, we just teach what he has in place, and that's high D salesperson every time. What other questions?
Yeah, hey, Mike, it's Clark.
Hey, Clark.
Hey, what was the name of that search you just talked about? People, what was it?
TruePeopleSearch.com.
TruePeopleSearch.com. Okay.
Yep.
Very good. Yeah, another question, too. I'm finding a lot of my bird dogs are finding me properties that are owned by LLCs and trusts.
Yep.
I know you talked before about that they're probably not the best people to ask us to buy the house from, but would they be potential buyers?
Could be either or. Yeah, just because an investor bought the property and they own it in something other than their name, that doesn't mean it's not causing a problem. So
that's true.
Yep. There's a, I've been talking about this pack of 12 deals that I've been working on for a while. We're hopefully going to get an answer back today, but that's owned by a group of investors and they're not under an individual name. So I found them out I got a hold of them through another connection through a property manager in the market. But had we just found these vacants and called them up and said, hey, you motivated to sell, the answer would have been yes.
Uh-huh.
So your skip tracer is not, or your VA, skip tracer is not going to take these obviously to TLO. This is where you just need somebody that can do some online research. And you just need somebody that can, you know, Google a name, check social media, corporatewiki.com, and see if they can track down a website or a phone number, a name or something.
They don't seem to be having any trouble finding numbers for these guys. My VA doesn't. So I know where they're at.
You want to call them. They can be obviously lead with, are you looking to sell? And if not, absolutely ask if they're going to buy because they're a little more organized. You know, clearly they set up an entity to buy in. And so lead with the sell and then follow up with the buy if they're not selling. Just like when you reach out to landlords. We've talked about that a few times on here. You know, hey, I saw your rental ad on Craigslist for 123 Main Street. You interested in selling? And they come back and say, no, I'm going to keep it. Thanks. Great. Are you still buying in the area by chance? So that's how that, it's the same conversation. Lead with the sell question and follow up with the, are you still buying?
Good enough. Thanks.
Yep. Good question. Who else? I think Denver's about to blow away here. Just a side note. The wind is howling. Jeez. You could go outside and hand a little kid a big kite and it'll take him away, I would think. What else?
I got a quick question again. So through the Hampton Roads, we've pretty much covered all the areas pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
Generated about 350, 380 leads, viable leads.
Okay.
Pulling from the FreedomSoft in the vacant leads. So, I mean, to pull that list and try to pump that into my system, I'm almost thinking it would be non-productive because we've combed those areas pretty tight. So we've probably already got those leads in the system somewhere.
Yeah, do it anyway. It'll tell you if it pulls it in and it shows an existing campaign, you'll know that it's already been worked. If it has a new status to it, you'll know that you haven't found it yet, and you can skip trace it. So I would absolutely pull it. So you
so
also
it will show it'll show in the system if it has a match because I've had my bird dogs
it'll
cross
show,
over the same ground.
It'll Yep, it'll show your bird dog's campaign that lead is already tied to it.
So, because I had two, I had two bird dogs, and they overlapped a little bit in a couple blocks, and I didn't find those leads were duplicated until afterwards. Where is that going to show up if it was duplicated? It didn't. Nothing popped up and said, "Hey, this is already in there," because they came in on the leads campaign.
I've been talking to the tech guys about that, like a little duplicate flag. If it sees same name, same address, and really can just be same address, because you could have one seller that's selling 10 deals, and those aren't duplicate addresses. So,
no.
Yeah, we've been chatting about that one for a little bit, how to handle it. But in this case, when you go to pull, I just did this the other day. I went to the U.S. Postal Service, and I pulled up 300 and X number of leads. And then when I looked into that campaign, some of them showed that they had already been worked. And I just pulled these new and just set up this campaign. And so what it's saying is this address is already in here, and here's the status of it. So, but I had, 250 new addresses.
So
I think it's worthwhile.
I guess I'll have to figure that out. So
you
can actually go in and pull the leads and put them in a campaign. So you just select it and put it in a campaign.
You either put them in an existing campaign or you click create new. So you're gonna run the search, then you're gonna select all the leads, and then you're gonna click the little campaign button, and it'll either say do you want to put them in an existing, or at the top it says create new campaign. You name it real quick. Set up a few things, hit go, and it'll park them in that new campaign. That's how I do it. And here's what I did, just so you know, because I want to break it out. So I do the advanced search, and then I go down, I click the out-of-state owner, and then I click the sale date drop-down and hit between. And what I did is I pulled, because I'm going to do this in different campaigns, I pulled last sale date between January 1st, so 1-1-2013, and December 31st, 2014, and there were 364 transactions. What that means is the last time the property was sold was between January 1, 2013, December 31st, 2014, in that two-year period, and the Postal Service is still showing it's vacant. So that's one campaign. Then I can go in and go from January 1, 2015, December 31st, 2016, out-of-state owner, and I can pull that campaign. And so we know instead of pulling one campaign that has a ton of leads in it, I'm breaking it up into those different time frames.
Okay.
And what that does is the reason you want to put in the sale date is if you found if you have properties that were sold 30 days ago and the Postal Service has shown they're still vacant, there's a chance it's a motivated seller, but there's a better chance that an investor bought it and they just haven't put anybody in it yet, right? So that's where that last sale date comes in handy. So now we know when I pulled those searches, I know that, hey, this thing traded hands. Somebody bought it in 2013 or 2014. It's now 2018, and the Postal Service is saying it's still vacant. So it could have been vacant for 4 years. That's one option. It could have been vacant, you know, more recently where they just had a tenant moved out or they moved out or whatever the case, but my likelihood goes up that there's a problem. So they bought the house a couple years ago, and it's still sitting vacant. So why is that? As opposed to, hey, this person bought it 30 days ago, and the house is vacant. Lesser, there's a lower chance that they're motivated. So that's how we use that.
I also use that same theory with checking Zillow, even if it's an LLC or an individual, if it shows the last sale, like a recent sale, but it was 2 years ago, and it's still vacant.
Yep.
So kind of
exactly.
That same philosophy and thing.
Just,
that they bought it, an investor might have bought it and didn't get to it or sitting on it, still vacant.
Yep. We're just sniffing motive. We're just looking for motivation. That's all.
Yeah.
And you were talking about running out. So pull those leads. You've got to get a VA scrounging, texting landlords, and you probably want to start considering direct mail and or bandit signs in the market because there are leads there. If you feel like you've covered it, you're right. It depends on what markets we're in, how long it takes to hit every zip code. You know, if you're in a bigger city, it's going to take us a while. It sounds like you got through that little area pretty quick. So move on to some other stuff because, you know, the deals are still there.
Yeah.
But, yep. And then Clark,
yeah, I ran into that
in
same. This is Dave. I was going to say I ran into that same issue with the same property under a couple different campaigns and or entries. And I was trying to merge, like, all the data that I'd taken notes in one and other notes in a different one. And so I wasn't seeing all the notes related to the address because I was only looking in one lead record rather than, you know, the ability to kind of merge lead records into ones where all that data is going to be under one lead record.
Yep. Yeah, I'll ask Steve again about it tomorrow. Rob's had he's had the tech guys on some other stuff, you know, mainly phone system related, but I'll ask him. And, you know, and then I think one of the challenges is going to be your address is going to have to be typed in exactly the same. So if one says 123 Main Street ST period and the other says 123 Main Street STREET, it's going to take it as two records. Is going to be my guess. I mean, a system can only do, you know, it's not intelligent. It just responds to ones and zeros, right? But I feel like,
right.
I think it should be fairly, and this is what I was asking him. I mean, that's the other thing is it can review data quickly, obviously. I think if it finds an exact match, maybe, you know, I was telling Steve, maybe it just puts a little, just parks a little symbol up by the address. And when you hover over it, it says this appears to be a duplicate or something like that. So I'll ask him about it again and see where it's at.
All right, great.
Yep. What else? We get everybody covered? I'll ask multiple times here. I just want to make sure.
No, I did call into the email into the support for FreedomSoft when I was having that issue. It was more of my mistake than anything when I was having the fields or the names duplicating in the other leads.
Hey,
and I never did get a response back.
and I don't remember seeing it. That probably would have come my way. You sent it to support at freedomsoft.com?
I went to the upper need help in FreedomSoft.
Yeah.
And
here's what
right,
I want to tell
right
all of you in coaching. Don't go to the support center. Send into the coaching. All questions.
Okay.
Get them in there. Because I should get it, right? If it's something really technical, I'm still training the customer service guys on FreedomSoft, and they're getting better around it. But if you all have a question, don't go into that maze. Just send it to the coaching center, coaching email. That one, that one we keep an eye on multiple times throughout the day. Whereas I look at, I log in, I answer a handful of questions every day on FreedomSoft, but I only log in maybe twice a day to check on it. So, whereas the coaching email goes to my phone, so I see that one all the time. Yep. Yeah,
I've got a lot of suggestions for FreedomSoft. Might be simple suggestions, might be complicated, but I think there's some.
Yeah, send them in the coaching.
I'm a visual guy, so I like to use things to make it simple for me to navigate. And when it comes up on a screen, I want to see what I want to see. I don't want to have to go into every lead to get details. So I've set mine up to where I can do that pretty easily. But you have like 8 colors to choose from, and I like to use those colors to signify where that lead's at because it's quick, it's visual. It'd be nice to have like a color wheel. Yeah.
Rob is chewing on the idea of a complete FreedomSoft revamp from a user interface look perspective.
Yeah.
He's obviously got a lot on his plate. It would be a massive, massive project.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things about purchasing an existing platform is it's got, first of all, it's a great tool, but Rob didn't design it.
No.
He would have done some things differently. And he just knows real estate and what investors need more than the original owners, right? They built it based on what they knew about real estate. And it's not really a knock. They just knew more about marketing than real estate. So now it's in the hands of a guy that really knows real estate, and he would have done some things different. So, we've worked to change some of that over time. But, again, he's thinking about just a complete revamp. Similar tools and features, but different look. We'll see if he can find the time to pull it off. But I think for the most part, you can click around, set up your custom fields, all that kind of thing. I'll tell you what's really valuable is to go into like your seller leads or your campaigns and edit that header bar. So you can drag. If you haven't done it yet, right, it says property address, contact, that kind of thing, campaign. If you go click the little cog wheel on the right-hand side of those header bars, like just if you're on a page full of leads, you can edit what's in that header bar.
Yeah.
And if you're ever to log into Rob's account, he's got all the relevant information up there. Now, it goes to the right off the screen, but you can just move, you can just drag it to the right. And all of the data that they want to see at a glance is customized by using that header bar. So hopefully that's making sense.
Yeah, that's what I had done online.
Okay.
That's exactly what I did.
Yep. That's a key. And then pull out.
No, I'm not.
What's that?
Yeah, I'm not knocking it. I mean, it's a great tool. It's absolutely awesome. It's awesome.
I want to see your suggestions. So. Get those over to, and you can send those to the coaching center as well, because we keep an ongoing list about what people request.
Yeah.
And user requests get implemented. We've got a bunch of them put in place. A bunch of great ideas. So, but yeah, and then what you can do obviously is the most important stuff, right? Like if you have a custom field, under contract price. Closing date, what's the status? You want to see what that is. Is it under contract, pending, whatever? You can put those kind of on the top left so that when you click into a page that has a bunch of leads, you can see the information, that you feel like is most most important. So what else? assume we got everything covered. So, yeah, let's have a great couple of days and weekend. We'll chat again on Monday. The big three, we're never going to lose sight of them. Generate leads, make offers, and meet buyers. Find buyers, right? All boils down to doing those three things. Weekly updates tomorrow. Some of you are better about that than others. Not going to name names. Get those in. Want to see where you're at. And again, it's really two things. I read them. We look at them. And it also helps you create the habit. What do you need to be tracking? Right? Because you want to get in the habit of, hey, what are the KPIs for the business? If you're not tracking it, you're going to be confused over time as to why things are happening the way they are in the business, why you're getting the result. If you know what the numbers are, there's never confusion, right? So it gives us clarity. So get those in tomorrow. Again, it's all about the big three. Keep generating leads, keep making offers, and that's really the key stat. How many offers are we making on a weekly basis? That's the number. And then keep meeting buyers. So, Mike, I was talking to you, I might as well be talking to everybody. You've got an acquisitions person talking to sellers, so you got to be talking to 5 buyers a day, okay. Monday to Friday. You do that, it doesn't take long before you have a really robust buyers list. Get in that habit, all right?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, good stuff, everybody. Thanks for checking in. Kind of a small group today, which is fine. Life gets busy. I get it, but let's have a good next couple days, good weekend, and we'll chat again on Monday. Any questions, obviously, get them into that coaching center, and we'll get a response back to you, all right?
Okay.
Appreciate
Thank
it,
you.
Mike.
Yep, talk soon. Have a good
Thanks, Mike.
Afternoon, evening, wherever you're at. Yep, take care, everybody.
Yes.